Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Wars are unpredictable, the ultimate exercise in the law of unintended consequences. The Americans and the Israelis have realized this and are in a state of panic. The Iranians, on the other hand, are playing their asymmetrical hand with precision. Crosstalking the war on Iran, I'm joined by my guest Larry Johnson in Tampa. He's a former CIA analyst and U.S. State Department counterterrorism official. In Toronto, we have Esteban Carrillo. He is a news desk editor at The Cradle. And in Prague, we cross to Jason Zahadas. He is an independent journalist and geopolitical analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Larry, let me go to you first in Tampa. Donald Trump has said in the last 2 months, 37 times, that there is a deal to be had, and it's just around the corner. It's going to be a few days. I'm just saying this is because, like all of us on this program and much of our audience, I watch very closely what's going on. And without naming names, people that I have an enormous amount of respect for and learn very much from have radically different opinions about what's going on here. Oh, there is a real deal in place. It's happening. Notes are being exchanged. To the other extreme is that there's never been a deal. There's not one on the horizon. And Donald Trump's interview with NBC News probably tells you everything you need to know. Okay, so I don't know how to bridge this gap. Take it away.
You can. It's an era of schizophrenia, multiple personality disorder. Yes, but there is a deal. In fact, Trump has, they've had agreements six times in the last 3 months. And Trump has walked away from it each time. Been negotiated by J.D. Vance. It is the current one is in place. In fact, we had Iran's U.N. ambassador say, "Yeah, we've with Pakistan mediating, and the Pakistanis have played a key role in this as proxies for China in bringing this deal together." But it's just a matter of Trump saying yes, and I think he's frankly so dysfunctional anymore that he's incapable of it. But the deal is there. Pepe Escobar and I were told 2 weeks ago by a source in Pakistan that was right in the middle of handling all of this that they thought it would be done within the next couple of weeks. So here we are, and it's out there, but Trump can't seem to pull the trigger on this one.
Well, Esteban, maybe he can't pull the trigger because Israel won't let him. I mean, because what we saw over the weekend is that Iran maintains its escalation deterrence very effectively and has made it very clear that this conflict is horizontal in the region, meaning including Lebanon and also the Palestine issue here. This is something maybe Trump and some of the people around him, probably not very many, not Mark Levin, could maybe make a deal on, but the Israelis certainly won't. And what we've seen, these conversations, expletives and all of that, I'm not sure if I believe that. But this is really the dilemma that, they went to the party together. Now they can't leave together, okay? They must stay together. They can't leave separately. Go ahead in Toronto.
I think it's very clear that, first of all, what the U.S. is negotiating is not really in the U.S.'s best interest. It's in the interest of Israel. And this is why you keep seeing Donald Trump declare that there's a deal about to be reached, to try to keep a lid on markets, to try to keep a lid on everything, just going out of control, as it's expected to happen, regardless of whatever he says. Not so much because there's actual advancement, because when you consider what the Israelis want, there's really no such thing as a good deal. There's no such thing as a deal when it comes to the Israelis. The Israelis want permanent war. They want permanent war. They want the U.S. They will be very happy with the U.S. just continuing to bomb Iran. But this is where their interests diverge, right? And all of a sudden, you start to see a bit of light between Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, who appear to be the best of allies. I would actually still say they are the best of allies, maybe by circumstance, maybe for other reasons. But what's in the middle of all of this, the crux of all of this entire thing, is what are the U.S.'s interests? And a continued war with Iran is not. in the U.S.'s interest. And they realized this, right? They went into war after Netanyahu lobbied for war with Iran for about over 30 years. Yep. Finally got it. He finally got his pats in the White House to say yes and go to war with Iran. And all of a sudden, they all realized, as did we, why this was such a bad idea in the first place, and why so many, U.S. administration after U.S. administration refused to jump into the fray, because, well, they knew that this would happen. Well, Donald Trump, you know, thought he was better, and now he's in this mess of which there's really no climbing out. And just to, you know, finish my idea here, Iran continues to strengthen its position now, essentially expanding the red lines far beyond their own territory to include Lebanon, to include the occupied Palestinian territories, in something that is even a worse position for the Israelis.
Yeah, Jason, I mean, when it gets down to what we saw over the weekend, and oh, by the way, the Houthis have joined the fray. I think there's a very simple formula on display, is that don't attack our allies and we won't attack your allies. That's what it's getting down to. If that is acceptable to Israel, certainly not. An Israeli ceasefire is Israel keeps firing and everybody else ceases. And this is, again, the dilemma that Donald Trump is going to have to deal with. But essentially, don't attack our allies when we won't attack your allies. You know what, Jason? That's the beginning of a deal. Jason, in Prague.
Well, I will say, when it came to the strikes over the weekend, those were to be expected. And the reason why is because ultimately, Israel and the United States, they view treaties as worthless, and they do not feel themselves to be bound by agreements. The reason why the negotiations in Islamabad have stalled for 2 months is because a deal requires Trump to fully surrender on Tehran's terms. That means admit defeat in regime change efforts, formally accept Iran's de facto control over the Strait of Hormuz, lifting sanctions, unfreezing assets. And of course, Tehran demands the total Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon and an end to hostilities there. Iran and Yemen only struck Israel, targeting mostly air bases in the central region, after the IDF attacked civilian apartment buildings in Beirut. And Israel's refusal to end their occupation of Lebanon, and by the way, they're not just occupying Lebanon, they're kind of adopting a sort of yellow line strategy there, yep, where they're destroying entire villages and depopulating all areas south of the Litani River, kind of adopting a sort of Gaza-style approach. But media reports are suggesting tension between Trump and Netanyahu. And the U.S., after Israel's retaliations against Iran, Trump threatened Netanyahu that Israel could potentially be on its own.
Okay,
here's the thing, though.
Okay, but those are news reports. I really need to be convinced that there is so much daylight between them. Finish up, Jason. Go ahead.
Yeah, but the thing is that U.S. involvement in these strikes is much deeper than they admit, and the reason why is because Israel cannot wage these wars. Trump can distance himself all he wants, publicly at least, but Israel cannot wage war against Lebanon, against Iran, against Yemen, against the Palestinian territories without U.S. military equipment and intelligence support. That is not getting cut off anytime soon. There are U.S. Think tank papers which openly describe using Israel as a proxy against Iran to maintain plausible deniability. And if that sounds familiar, that's because NATO support for Zelensky's mafia state is coming to mind.
Yeah, you know, Larry, I can't see how there's a deal without the Americans giving up something first. I mean, first before you can even say there's a deal. Frozen assets, number one, okay? They need something. They need some good faith here, okay? Some kind of regional architecture with Russia, maybe in China involved here. What I'm saying is that for a deal to happen, you need sweeteners. You need an hors d'oeuvre to get it started here. I don't see that. And during Trump's interview with NBC, he said none of those things are on the table. Larry.
Well, actually, I think there's something bigger going on here. Number one, we can't ignore the fact that there was a New York Times story on Saturday talking about Israel intensifying its spying on America. and on the Trump administration in particular. Why? They were trying to find out what the United States was doing with Pakistan. That is absolutely true. That in fact, that story should have been released 3 or 4 days before that. When that story broke, that was a potentially big story. What took attention away from it? Israel's strike on Lebanon. And that matters because Iran has declared a new policy. For the first time in 47 years, they've said that an attack on Lebanon, an attack on the Palestinians is going to result in they're going to act in retaliation. That strike that Israel carried out in Dahiya, the suburb of the southern suburb of Beirut, it was not one of their more intense strikes. It was like they were testing Iran to say, well, let's see.
Or plus, Larry, were they testing but they were testing Trump as well.
Well, no, I don't think they were testing Trump. They were testing Iran, because Trump actually, this deal is real, at least according to the Pakistani sources that I've been in touch with. And when that happened, Israel, in fact, the Israeli officials have conceded. They didn't think. They thought Iran was bluffing. Iran does not bluff. And so when Iran struck back, we got into a bit of kabuki theater. They launched 5 waves of attack, 4 missiles per wave. They hit a variety of targets, but they didn't go for seeing how much devastation they could cause. It was more of their warning shot across the bow of Israel. We mean what we say. Israel, in turn, despite Trump asking them not to retaliate, to hold off, they went ahead and did it. And then the next round that came back actually did cause some significant damage, particularly at the air bases in the south, at Nevatim and at Tof. So, and then after that, Israel didn't retaliate so far.
Okay, all right, Larry, hold that thought. I got it. This is broadcast television. I have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the war against Iran. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the war on Iran. Okay, let's go back to Toronto. Esteban, let's follow up on what Larry was saying at the end of the first part of the program here. The Israelis have intensified their espionage on American officials. That's not new, but I mean, maybe there's a higher intensity because they just simply don't know what the Trump administration is doing. Esteban, are they worried that that Donald Trump might cut and run? Is that what they're worried about more than anything else?
It's starting to seem like that. Yes, I think so. You know, I think more than also what they're trying to get is the details of any deal so that they know how to blow it up. Right. They will try to blow it up no matter what even the consequences are. It's very interesting, right, to hear about Israeli spying, because, as you said, this has been a longstanding practice. So now they must be really going over the top for even the Pentagon to put out warnings about this situation. But as I said, you know, the Israelis, they are not really, they want war. They want the occupation to continue, in particular in Lebanon, right? They've been trying as hard as they possibly can to decouple the Lebanese from the Iranian front. And as Larry said, right, the attacks in Dahiya over the weekend, they hit empty offices. They didn't even have a real target to hit. They just did it in an almost symbolic way. And what did they get? They got pushed right into the fire by the Iranians, and as you said as well, by the Yemenis, right? All of a sudden, we remember, all right, Yemen is also involved in this. Then they closed the Bab el-Mandeb Strait for Israeli shipping in particular. So once again, today the IRGC declared our new the resistance axis, as they like to call themselves, it's going to establish a new strategic defense line that stretches from the Strait of Hormuz all the way to the Bab el-Mandeb Strait. And previously they have said it will even include the Mediterranean if the Israelis continue to push. So of course the U.S. it's trying to put a lid on all of this, and that's again where their paths diverge, right? Are we about to see a divorce between the Israelis and the U.S.? I honestly highly doubt that. My own personal perspective, I do not see that happening.
Yeah, I think the donors would divorce Trump before that happens. Exactly. We all know about that. But Jason, it's already been brought up here, and it's something that I find really amazing. you know, we all watched after October 7th, the conflict that Israel had with Hezbollah. Hezbollah took some very terrible blows. I'm thinking about the beepers and things like that. And then we have the government of Assad falls, you know, the decimation of Gaza. And then because, you know, the axis of resistance, as it's called, seemed very weak, this put greater impetus to attack Iran. Now, after, 101 days, 102 days now, the arc of resistance and resilience is very much in play. I think we're all a bit surprised by that. Jason.
Yeah, so... For some time after 2024, after the fall of Assad, it definitely seemed as if Israel was the, I guess you could say, the regional pole of the Middle East. But over the course of the Iran war, not only have we seen the decline of Israel back in March, the IDF's chief of staff, General Eyal Zamir. Said that the Israeli military is on the verge of collapse, but we're also seeing the decline of the U.S. empire through the crisis of the global energy market. But ultimately, so Washington's aim throughout the course of this conflict was primarily to reduce Middle Eastern energy production, cut off China's oil supply from Iran, and ultimately to increase Asia's dependence on the United States. But this has largely failed, and the reason why is because China's buying its discounted barrels from Russia. And as we saw this weekend, Israel and the United States, they mistakenly believed that Iran was desperate for a ceasefire or for a peace agreement or something along those lines. And Israel probably believed that they could act as some sort of, I guess you could say, spoiler by striking Beirut. But Iran has shown that they are standing stronger than ever, and they will not abandon their brothers and sisters in Hezbollah and southern Lebanon, and also their brothers and sisters in Gaza. The spokesman for Hamas, Hazem Qasem, he confirmed that Iran is demanding a full withdrawal from Gaza as part of any peace agreement and is making intensive efforts to include Palestine in any deal. Trump has had a draft peace agreement on his desk for over 3 weeks now, and the biggest barriers to peace ultimately is Trump's subservience, yeah, to the Zionist lobby and his refusal to recognize Iran, Lebanon, and Palestine as sovereign nations.
Larry, who's in control here? I mean, because you know, you're better sourced than I am here. Like I said, 37 times a deal is on the table. It's just around the corner in all this. I mean, to what degree is Trump in control here? Because we all know he wants out. That's for sure, okay? He just doesn't know how to get out. And how do you get out and still call it a win? That's going to be some really interesting marketing. Go ahead, Larry.
It is. This past week, according to Robert Barnes, pollster Richard Barras went to the White House and laid out the news to Donald Trump and to Susie Wiles that, hey, you're a dead man walking if you keep this up. And to put it politely, he was viewed as... I'll clean it up for television. But Donald Trump's relationship with Bibi Netanyahu means that Donald Trump is Bibi's prison paramour. Okay.
Yeah, I saw you on I saw another appearance with you. You were a little bit more profane. That's okay. We all get the point. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So and so Trump, Trump still has enough mental faculties left that, you know, he doesn't want to be seen doing that. He doesn't want to be seen as Jimmy Carter having hostages held. He doesn't want to be seen as someone who's lost a war. And so he's caught between all these conflicting things. Plus, he's actually in serious mental decline. There's something going on with him that some say is prefrontal lobe dementia. But he's not the same person that he was. You know, before, 5, 6 years ago, Donald Trump was the one who'd seek alternative opinions. But now he snaps at anybody that brings up anything alternative. But J.D. Vance has actually been the one driving this effort to get a peace deal. They've had, Robert Barnes, I quote him because he was Trump's lawyer. He still got contacts in the White House. He said they've had six agreements that Trump, we're now on number six, that Trump has just walked away from. They got it packaged, ready to go, and Trump says no. We'll see if this one happens. And I can, for Estevan to be skeptical, that means Estevan's normal, okay? Because
I'm very, very skeptical. And so, Esteban, the position I've taken over the last 2 months is that it's going to be the global economy that is going to decide this here, because Trump cannot continue delaying making a decision, because Iran is resilient, okay? They're stronger now than they've ever been. And so the clock is ticking, but the clock is ticking against Donald Trump, and it's the global economy that's going to force his hand eventually. And it will be humiliating. Esteban.
I think it already is humiliating. You know, yeah. This is the reason why Donald Trump seems to be almost losing his mind a bit over the past couple of weeks. I think we all wonder, right? Like, when is this crash going to happen? And if anything, you have to give it to the U.S. and their partners. They have really tried to get things under control, right? The prices of the barrel of oil is still under $100 at all. That's not the actual price, right? When oil is actually exchanging hands, it's much higher, especially in certain regions of the world that have already been suffering for a long time, right? They've been keeping control of what happens in the Western Hemisphere so far. But at one point, that is all going to unravel. And there's another big thing that I think, it's also indicative of just how badly the U.S. stepped in it. And it's the upcoming World Cup. It's just what's happening surrounding it with the team, with the Iranian team, with the Somali referee, with the fans, with eyes deployed in the stadiums. I mean, it's an absolute disaster, right? Already the U.S. looking in a bad light. Now they're about to host this global event that everyone in the world pays attention to. And and politics are not going to be away from it, Peter. I mean, you're going to see also this explode in a way, it blow up in his face, right? Yesterday he was at the NBA finals and got booed out of the building.
I saw it.
I mean, this man is persona non grata left and right. So I think, when it comes to the global economy, they might be able to stretch it out for a bit longer. They've already managed to stretch it out for a couple of months. But at some point, all of this is going to blow up in his face like the war did from day one. The war blew up in his face with the attack in the girls' school in the girls' schools in Minab in Iran, and all the way to today, in which 37 times he's claimed there's a deal, and 37 times he's lied on this particular topic.
Well,
right?
I don't know. I don't think any of us want to get into Donald Trump's head because we'd never be better off afterwards. But Jason, but the fact is that there isn't a deal. Shows the lack of leadership on the part of Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a very weak leader. Jason.
Yeah, another thing that I will mention is the fact that I'll go back to what I said earlier. He doesn't want a deal, and the reason why is because a deal would mean he would have to surrender. And Trump, last month it was, Trump openly declared, and this just shows his entire attitude towards the idea of peace. He openly declared on national TV that even if crude oil prices had risen to $200 per barrel, that it would be worth it. So he has zero regard for Americans struggling with higher gas prices and grocery costs. He's so concerned about building this legacy where he appears as the man who took decisive action against Iran or against Cuba or against Venezuela, to a point where he's now sacrificing his polling numbers. He's now sacrificing his party's chances in the midterms.
But what he's done is he sacrificed his presidency, and that is his That is his business, sacrificing the country and the global economy. Well, that's unforgivable. And on that note, gentlemen, we've run out of time. I want to thank my guests in Toronto, Tampa, and in Prague. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.